Recording.
We shall see. It might be a short one. I've got kids asleep upstairs.
Oh, daddy. I am away.
Yes. How are you?
And I am finally back in the studio.
You're back in the shop.
Studio. Did I say studio?
Yeah. You did say studio.
Guess the UPS guy came by the other day and he realized something just clicked. And he saw in my office and he was like, whoa, you got like a whole studio in there. And it's like, yeah, I guess so.
Did you have your streamer lights on?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's so crazy, isn't it?
Hey. What are you up to?
I didn't even write this down. I think maybe the biggest thing that's happened in the last week is I finally grasped that Bamboo Lab is just out of PETG high flow, like indefinitely.
Oh.
And they had some sales going on, and I was like, I think the first day or something, I was like, oh, maybe I'll buy some of that. We probably need some more. It's a good price. And then I went back to check. This is like 2-3 weeks ago now. It's just completely out of stock. Like, the entire, let's say, category of PETG, just regular high flow, just gone. Totally.
And this is one of your primary ones?
Oh, yeah. All the tool tags, dust boots. I guess that's the majority of our printing. So, and it's not the end of the world. We've switched for like dust boots before. Like we've been through a ton of different options. Mm. The problem is actually how much we've dialed in specifically, like, now we have like spacers and stuff where inserts go into them and the tolerances are like in the thousands. Because it's so consistent. Like, I don't know, we dial it in so that they perfectly press in with like a press. And so anyway, I've been scouring the internet to find more and have overpaid for the normal, but it's not crazy. Uh-huh. And gotten what I hope will make us last through the period. But in the meantime, we ran out of like one of the colors and we're testing. So we spent probably like a few days this week just not really making things, being unproductive, basically. Oh,
it's no fun. I just checked the Australian Bamboo website, but also says out of stock.
The theory was that they found some defect and just pulled the whole stock or something like that. But I don't know. I also saw it could be 1 to 2 months. There's another theory. I don't know if that came from support or what, but yeah. That's a long time. I usually am ordering once or twice a month.
Mm. Frustrating.
Yeah. Trying to be lean and order on demand and bite you in the butt again.
How many times have you heard Saunders say, retell that story about old mate who keeps... Years of inventory.
Raw material. Or something like that. Yeah, yeah. Or some, the other gun maker. Some, I forget which maker. One. Somewhere in Europe. Yeah. I think about that every time. Anyway. That's probably my top story.
Top story of the week. Cool.
You're beaching.
I'm technically beaching. I don't have a great deal to share. I've been coding at night a bit and, yeah, basically I'm away. Laura's installing a sculpture commission up in Queensland.
Yeah, right.
So we're all up here. She's installing all week and it's a beautiful part of the world. And I should be just enjoying myself with the kids, but I'm in this sort of bind of like feeling the pressure to work or try and stay on top of work during the day, you know, pick up the phone when it rings, feel, you know, there's very few Slack questions coming through from the team. They're doing great. But you know, customers are calling, there's quotes that need to be done. There's drawings that need to be done and feeling the pressure of needing to do that during the day, but then, you know, also just wanting to be a decent parent and kind of be on holidays with them, do fun stuff. And so then, you know, once they're down and asleep at night, basically doing night shift, but just have
working. Like
I've been sick the last week, so I just don't have the energy for it and just feeling pretty crappy about the whole thing. So yeah, not in a super fun headspace, but nice to be chatting to you.
I do this too, and maybe we just need to, I was going to say scold, but maybe it's a positive reinforcement of, I tell you, you shouldn't be working right now. So he just hangs up.
Beep, beep, beep.
But I would probably be scolded by my wife for working in that context, even though I would feel the same way as you.
Yeah.
Just fair both ways.
Yeah, totally. So I don't know. There's stuff that needs to be done, and I feel the pressure of, you know, if I do clock off, what's that going to do to our, I just can't detach from it. Like, what's that going to do to our revenue target next week? It's going to kill it. Because there's a whole bunch of quotes that just need to be converted this week into deposits and stuff done in order to keep the whole thing ticking over. So, yeah, other than, like, Christmas break, this is the first sort of challenge to the sort of the system since it's downsized and become much more gem dependent. And the Christmas break was challenging in its own way. Like, that was also very tricky cash flow wise. So, you know, and took months to sort of get out of that hole. So, yeah, I'm just aware of that. And yeah, it's kind of where things are at here. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. It makes sense to me, I guess, but I keep idealizing your sales process as the design, I'm going to call it the configurator for life, the design maker builder.
Configurator, yeah.
Tool. The configure builder. It feels like it solves so many of the problems you had of doing custom sales, but I know that also that hand touch helping a customer through confidence of, like, it's going to work for them is probably pretty critical still. And yeah, I don't know. I suppose it's just, I mean, you don't need advice necessarily, but it's probably just a little bit of cross training for when you do want to leave and disconnect, that somebody else can step in and keep the minimum amount of, here, you need to
stuff
answer. As a team, you all need to answer some emails or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I just didn't prep for that at all.
Yeah. No, I know, yeah.
But no, it's on my radar now. Of like, cool, yeah.
Right.
Should have thought about that. There's kind of the carrot is there of, like, I can imagine a future where the configurator does inspire more confidence and people can use it more frequently with more customizations within it without sort of any hand holding, which would be cool. You know, there's a future there where there would be enough sort of just stock orders throughout a period like this where I could sort of just check out of the sales process more for a week or two. So I just need to keep chasing that and, you know, try and get to a point where that's actually possible for various reasons. Sure. But, you know, one side benefit would be being able to sort of, clock off for more than 24 hours here and there.
I know the pain. I was just thinking, again, it doesn't solve all of these problems, but just in improving that workflow potentially, what if there's a way to, like, if somebody's unsure, you could have, like, a proof system of, I know you already have, like, the send thing, but maybe it's, like, they finish their checkout, but it doesn't, like, it authorizes, but doesn't charge or something. They can, you know, like, when you order, I don't know if you do this, when you order online from any of the, like, oh man, sticker places or a lot of those there. They want to send you a proof that you need to approve before they produce it.
Artwork proof, yeah.
And maybe that just is like the one little extra step that you could option into if you feel concerned it's not going to be right. And then they've already committed to the purchase, basically. And then not walked away for some reason.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. Yeah.
Well, I like it's a little bit tricky.
Yeah. But yeah, meanwhile, back in the shop, I left Johnny alone with the robots and we chatted and gave him a list of things to tackle. And he's been making progress, which is exciting to see. He sent me some videos yesterday as he was finishing for the week.
Mm-hmm.
A little list of things of where he's at. So yeah, he's successfully posted code out of both Grasshopper and Fusion. And I think that video that I reshared on Insta yesterday was Fusion environment where he's modeled the kind of the workbench and the robot envelope and yeah, just posted out a simple 2D contour and got it, you know, doing a toolpath.
What translated the G code? Cursor?
What was his workflow? It was pretty funny. I'll pull up his message because it was surprisingly convoluted. So he's posting out of Fusion using the ABB post processor, which produces rapid code. That's fine.
Oh, wow.
But the Fusion post in the ABB post in Fusion posts like to a folder with multiple files, and some of those files are useful and some are not. And so he's using Cursor to combine those into one file. And then he's dropping in his own persistent tool data, which he's worked out, like the correct orientation tool data for that HSD spindle relative to the wrist.
Holy moly.
And manually tweaking some speed data and then running that file, and that's working. So I think we can do a lot of that by modifying the post.
Right, yeah.
Think, you know, that'll just be settings in the post of like, cool, just output to this file format and this structure, blah, 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 with this tool data in it. And then, yeah, that's all stuff we can do. But at the moment,
cool.
It's a fairly convoluted process, but it's working. It's awesome to see.
Right. No kidding. It was nice. Yeah. I had a little bit, I'm sure other people had this feeling too, watching the video. I was like, oh my God, there's like a hammer in the way. Can you hit that end mill? Like, it felt like it was just going to keep going down into the... Just
plowing through everything.
Clear your workspace.
Yeah, yeah. The spindle is live now, wired. It's wired back in.
Into like a VFD even?
Yeah, yeah. Into the drive.
Wow.
It's not wired into the controller in terms of you can't start it with an M code yet.
Oh.
That's something for me to tackle when I get back. But the wiring looms there, I've just got to work out in like the rat's nest in the top of the ABB controller with like a million BLC connections.
Oh,
like
I bet.
Where the hell to put that input output stuff.
I've never tried to do anything like that. It sounds difficult.
It looks challenging, but we'll see. It's probably simple, right? Maybe. Yeah.
This is where augmented reality glasses would be ideal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first time that I remember being burned by not having a drawing of a part, you know, kind of like a traditional machining shop process would probably be the customer provides you a drawing, not a step file, not a 2D file. Yeah. And in this case, now 2 years of me making a couple sets a year for this woodworker who designed their own brass poles for a desk, which are cool. And I have his whole Fusion file, like not like a step file. Like I have the Fusion file of the whole desk. I ran the big long handle poles, which are like longer parts.
Yeah.
There's three parts for this job, multiple pieces. And get to the last part, which I thought was the easiest. It's just a little cylinder or like a tapered conical pole with a tap on one end. And I cut like, I was like, well, I need two. I'll cut four. Papple extra. Cut four. First one goes in. I'm like, oh no, I messed up. And I hadn't cut far enough. And then I cut the second one. It's like, oh, it's also messed up. And I cut like two more. And I was like, oh, what's going on? I was there from 4:30. I started this. I was going to get this done by 5, be home on time. And I messaged Aaron. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. I've done this before. These parts are not coming out. Like they were, like the chamfer would be all off on the second side. And I was like, what is happening? And I finally just like had to go back to my desk and I made a drawing. Because I was like, something's weird here. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. The part was leaning. It's like a lofted part, not a straight extrusion.
Oh.
And it's like
snap.
A few degrees, like such that I could not tell because of the reflection of the part in the lighting, whether it was actually tapering or not. And so somehow in the past, I had accidentally clocked them perfectly.
Yeah.
And in this current incarnation, I couldn't figure out what, I just thought I was like going crazy. I thought my vise wasn't parallel or coplanar. I checked so many weird things, reset offsets, and it was just a tapered part that the client had never mentioned, and I had never thought, oh, I should... Like, Fusion doesn't make this easy to, like, check, you know, like, the lean of a tapered cylinder. I don't know what the lesson is.
Far out.
Make a drawing every time, I guess. So, hang on.
You'd made them before, but somehow fluked it to get it right. Last time.
I just put them in the right way somehow.
How to send you crazy. Wow. That's awesome. I don't know. Yeah,
so
I suppose a drawing would show that, right? A good drawing would show that in terms of the axis of the lane. It was immediately clear,
right, once I did it, that, oh, yeah, it tapers. And then I looked at how we made it in the file, and it wasn't revolved or an extrusion with a tape or like a chamfer or something. It was like a loft. And I was like, okay. Oh my God.
Who made the file?
The client originally sent me it and just was like, hey, can you make these parts for me? And I was like, sure. You know, like it's always been a good project for us. You know, it's probably a pitch for Toolpath. I even threw it into Toolpath. Thinking it would give me the answer, and it also did not catch that it was tapered or like warn me of that in any way.
Interesting.
It could machine it, because like you can machine it very easily from both directions. It just, the note about that it has to be oriented was totally missing. So what I have finally, after cutting it like a 15 times to make one part, basically, I realized I could just do it in one op. With a slitting saw.
Oh, really? Cool. Sick.
Just cut it off at the bottom. I have a slitting saw and haven't used it yet, so.
Which way are you machining it? Like, that way, yeah.
Just like this, so I can get the tap, and then I just need a back chamfer.
Out of bar stock? Brass. Like, out of rod? Brass rod?
Yeah, it's what we had on hand, which I make the other ones out of is square brass. Square,
okay. Like, yeah, cool.
Inch and a quarter, inch and an eighth.
Sick. That's funny.
Yeah. It took me, between training classes and other things, I finished the first set and sent them off to the client, which he only needed one set at the time, on Wednesday last week, and didn't finish the other part until yesterday. So a week to get him one more part. And I was like, this is just embarrassing. I had to 3D print a fixture to hold it in there so I could get it aligned right. So I'm going to slit them next time. Slit those babies.
Sick. One and done.
I like Good reason to learn how to do that.
Something just hit the floor. Hopefully it wasn't a child. My middle child hasn't yet learned how to stay in a bed, like without sides.
Oh, yeah.
Without guardrails.
Yeah.
He fell out of bed the other night onto a hard timber floor. Just like, but he didn't really wake up. He screamed, but he didn't fully come to. And I just kind of just like held him and put him back to bed, and he just fell, went back to sleep.
Oh, man.
I don't know if he remembers. Oh, there's now like a pile of cushions on the floor around him, just like a little bumper pad.
That's funny.
I stayed up way too late last night, given that I was getting up early to record with you, coding up a storm, trying to fix my own mess, actually, with this Android app that I've coded up for Laura's sculpture that she's installing now. It's like a VR environment within like a telescope sort of enclosure that she's made. And so you look through this telescope and you see, you're seeing the environment that you're in, but in like an animated form. Yeah, I've coded up this sort of relatively simple Android app that you can look around, like pan, basically just pan around a video using the sort of gimbal, whatever, gyro rotation stuff. Anyway, there was a working version of it on one of her tablets. And the other night I sat down to make some one minor change and I broke the whole thing and then realized I didn't have any backup of it.
I've been through that lately.
And so then I was like, oh my God, Jim, it's terrible. So then I tried to roll back Dropbox and then that's kind of worked, but it didn't roll back to the version that I thought I had. Anyway, I went back to the wrong point. So I was like, right, now I better learn how to use GitHub. So I am now backing up key sort of points in the project to a GitHub repo. So that feels pretty grown up and adult. I've no idea what I'm doing there. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, it took me like half a year plus just to understand all the steps. And frankly, Cursor makes it 1,000 times easier because it knows all the commands. And it also has it built into the side where you can like do that. But I used to have to type commands in a terminal before I used Cursor. And it was, I just sucked at it. It would take me like so long to figure out how to do this each step.
I can imagine. So it says
get pull, get push, get
commit. It says there's one branch, but yeah, I've pushed it a few times. Does that mean there's still like version control there, or can I not go back because there's only one branch? You have
commits. What the downside would be? So I'll try to explain it how I understand it best. What you want is like a main branch, right? If you think about the tree. Almost like inverted, where all the tree branches are trying to feed back into the main. So you work on like a new idea or a feature in a separate branch. When it's ready to be merged to the main, usually somebody other than yourself is supposed to review it. But then it gives you, you put commits into that branch. Commits are just saves. It's like a place where you have something that you've figured out, right? Yeah. Or it's a good stage. And otherwise, without branches, you are what you would call like, you know, committing to main or pushing to main, which is
if
you were using that code as a website or for your robot and you made a mistake, it would just be pulling in live potential mistakes.
Broken code. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And it is nice too, in that like if you've worked on a feature and it sucks or like had issues, it's much easier than to like even have Cursor or yourself like take that crap out again if it's been separated more than just commits, like as a branch.
Yeah, sure.
Branch holds the commits.
More separate. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
More identifiable as a different thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doing it as you're doing it is still, I think, better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. Next step is just
about some branches.
Okay, I'll try and learn how to do that. I've only committed once I've sort of got the project to a point where I've, you know, I physically tested it on this tablet next to me and I've like, cool, I like this version. This is a good sort of safe point. And then I've pushed it at that point.
Anyway, yeah, right.
Hopefully.
Which is good. That's still like better than working on it live in a folder where that's the only place it's saved.
Yeah, yeah.
Dropbox, but even then I have continuously lost work. And my biggest fault is that I don't commit enough. And it's like a lesson I learned in like architecture school. Just keep saving. What am I doing? You know, like why am I trying to put too much into this one like iteration. And
yeah,
so I've been trying to teach myself to be more like iterative. It's still not doing that well. It's confusing.
I couldn't believe how big this project got with me just faffing around over a few seconds. It's like 1,000 files in this folder.
1,000?
Yeah. Since there's 1,000 items in this project folder. Frightening.
It is kind of fun to have cursor just, if you like in it, you know, in a new conversation, be like, hey, so I've been working on this a while. What's inefficient? How can I optimize this? Like, I just did a bit of work on something like that too, where it found that I was like, I'm working on Airshop, and it was like somehow had gotten to a place where it was just really inefficient, where I was pulling hundreds of megabytes of database each time I would like load the home dashboard. It's like, oh, that's how I blew all the data out. I see.
Yeah, I had one of my most productive sessions in a way on it last night. And I credit that partly to my main like AI assistant that I use in Sim Theory. I spun her up as like a, cool, tonight we're working on this, blah, blah, blah. I'll use you as like a second opinion on a bunch of stuff I'm trying to solve in Cursor.
That's interesting.
And I was just feeding Cursor's outputs and thinking back into my secondary assistant and saying, cool, this is where Cursor's at.
Yep.
And we're having this sort of tit for tat of like, oh, isn't Cursor silly? Like, look what it's trying to do. And then she'd look at like some of the just, I was just giving her some of the main code activity files, and she was looking at that and going, cool, try this. And so rather than just me inputting the next prompt into Cursor, I was getting her feedback on the files as well, and then feeding them both back in concurrently. And I was fixing things much more rapidly than I think I have in previous sessions. Right. And like there were a couple of breakthrough moments where it was just like, oh, yeah, that, you know. Because of all that extra information, it seemed to sort of fix that pretty quickly and get through to the next stage. So, yeah, I feel like that sort of second set of eyes, it's kind of like the, what do they call it in AI stuff? It's like the mixture of experts where you run like three different models talking to each other, and they all have different like roles in the project. So one's a code reviewer, one's a project manager. I don't know how to set that up, but there are ways to set up that sort of environment where the user is inputting a prompt, and then you have a mixture of experts who are all sort of have a speciality within that. So it's kind of like doing that manually, I think, but it was really effective.
That's cool.
But yeah, I drank a lot of whiskey and coded late into the night. It's one of the more sort of, what's that, dopamine-inducing AI activities that I've come across, I think. Like, it's quite...
The whiskey?
No. Cursor. I find it quite sort of, it's almost like playing, it's a bit akin to gambling or something. Not that I've ever gambled, but it's like kind of...
Will I get it right this time?
Yeah, you roll the dice, will I get it right? Am I going to win this round and make progress, or am I going to go backwards and lose a whole lot?
Yeah. It took me like 3 nights. Usually I get through like a whole concept in a night, and it took me 3 different nights to get this last PR closed because it kept having errors, and I was like, kept having to like attack it different ways, like start new chats, reconsider. And it's interesting in a way, like, I can give it, you can keep saying, like, oh, AI is just doing all of it. And it's like, yes, it's doing the brunt work, but I'm still having to, like, strangely, creatively think about how to solve both its problems and the project's problems. Because it's still, like, it, you know, there is still this big problem, which is interesting for how exceptional all this stuff is that, even in Cursor, like you get to, I don't know if you've had this, but you get so far into a chat and it's like, you need to start a new chat. You're down in the bottom of this like chat hole.
Yeah.
And it just won't it won't solve problems anymore. And so then you start a new one. It's like, oh, I've forgotten all the shit we just talked about. And even if you give it reference, it still is like, well, let me look up what your code base is like. And it's like, what? You're inside my code. What do you mean? Like, how do you not know? So I don't know. That'll improve, I'm sure. But anyway, that's the section.
Something I've been doing is at the end of the session, if I'm mid-challenge, is getting it to create like a file of like current project status and current challenges. Mm-hmm. And just like leave that open in my workspace. And so I can resume back with that file open as the context, or a couple of files like that as the context, and go, cool, let's pick this up again. Yep. And it, you know, does its thing, reads those files first. I don't know if that's good practice or not, but I still haven't tried using cursor rules. But
maybe two quick things that I've learned that are really super helpful for using cursor with GitHub and all this. Have it make documentation that it refers to, and make it like it makes it human readable. But it's super good when other people come to join. It's like better than most documentation, I feel like, because I just have it put it into the repo itself.
Yeah, and I've been doing that,
and that's amazing. The other part, just a lesser step, is have you started using auto mode yet? Which I was resistant to. But I blew through my credits because they changed the pricing structure. And suddenly I was past my 500 and they changed that whole thing. And suddenly I was paying, it was like supposed to be like 4 cents a request for like Claude Sonnet. And suddenly it was like based on the token count or like how much time it took. So I was doing like 30 cent requests and like half 0.7 cent, you know, 77 cent requests. And it suddenly stopped working, and it was like, oh, you've hit your quota. And I was like, quota? I'm already paying. What do you mean? I went and looked at the billing, and it was like most of my day had been, it was like $10 or something. I was like, ah, well, that sucks.
Yeah, right.
So I turned it on auto mode, and that supposedly you don't hit a limit. Like you can hit a quote, like a, you can hit a limit, but it's much harder. It's a little bit stupider. But you're supposed to use the right model based on what the thing requests.
Mode, and it also I know what you're talking about. Yep.
Ratchet up to different better ones if it can't solve the problem, supposedly. Okay. I've had pretty good success with it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I haven't tried that. I haven't done enough work in there to hit my limit, so I've just been stuck on Claude 4 Sonnet. But
that's what I had done until they changed. But
yeah.
Got expensive. Relatively.
Yeah. Relatively. Still very cheap.
Yeah. Incredibly. Shh. We don't want them to know. Yeah. It doesn't tell me how many, but I was like into the probably 700 requests, but now they've changed it so you can't see it anymore. I hear little ones, but yeah,
there's people bashing around contained. Up there. They've stayed contained up there. The designer chair blocking the top of the staircase is successfully working as a barricade.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite stressful staying in, like, what is quite a nice apartment with little people that just seem hell-bent on trashing the furniture in any way they can.
Yes. Like,
right. Stop. Don't touch that. But like, thankfully this time I remembered to like take a walkthrough video of the whole apartment before like they trashed anything. So I know
like you're young and you're like having a party at your parents' house.
I know where everything needs to go back at the end. What were you going to say?
Oh, my little one's been obsessed with slamming things on mirrors lately. Windows, mirrors, whatever he can get his hands on, and just chick, chick, chick. Can you stop? And
can't stop, won't stop. Wow.
One other thought that I sent to you was, since there's so much scraping going on all the time with all these different models on websites, and now the capability is there to make CAD models, I was thinking about how disadvantageous it is to publish publish really detailed drawings, even as an image or in text description, or just the worst case would be you're just putting like step files up to download, because it just is like, it's, you know, it's probably just a minor inconvenience for somebody trying to copy or duplicate something. But you could basically at some point just go, hey, can I make the, I don't know what's proprietary, the designer thing that's a specific dimension and it has a step file on the page, and it's now you can just take that and it's gonna throw it all into its training data, and
yeah,
just like all these other things that are getting either sued or I mean, there was just a big lawsuit that Claude won, Anthropic won, that they basically trained on tons of data, tons of imagery, and the court said, oh, it's fine because of, I think it was like some kind of like innovation clause.
Oh, what?
But like they were like basically letting it happen to like, yeah, not right, stifle innovation.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I was just thinking about like what's the worst case there? And it's like, well, they're not apologizing, and I'm sure they could figure out how to reverse engineer all these things anyway. So I don't know.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that sort of. Yeah, I suppose in some sense I feel safe because we make physical things, but I think that's a really valid point about 3D assets.
I don't love it, because if that's the case, if that is a good reason, which you can argue, it doesn't matter. Like you get, you know, an Orange Vice or a Kurt Vice download, you still can't make the thing yourself necessarily.
I can't make an Orange Vice. Yeah.
I think that's part of their thinking. In the world where we are like getting close to finally having access to good reference models, maybe that's retraction now, as companies will get concerned and move away from that. I don't know. It's kind of too late, probably, though.
Yeah, probably. Cat's out of the bag. But it's a good thought. Yeah.
And for a short one, I've got a lot to do. Yeah. Too, so might as well.
Yeah, I should probably go and help with the cat herding upstairs.
Okay. I got.
It's time for Things We Love.
So loud.
Sorry. It's just ears. I got one little thing I just thought of. I was really enjoying. I'd been recommending this on YouTube a while back with this guy. I don't even remember his name. Matty, I want to say. He's a Canadian and has a YouTube series where he's doing like outdoor stuff. And then like the video that popped up was, I bought an abandoned house on a remote island 6 months in, and he like buys this 100-year-old house on an island he has to boat to up in Canada in Newfoundland. I don't know how to say that properly. And I would have pushed the house over. The walls aren't attached. There's gaps in the sides, leaking at the top. It was abandoned, but he's slowly fixing it up and living in it. And it's very like just kind of calming to just watch him slowly work on this house over a few series. And now him and his partner living there and expanding it. It's just a good watch. So
nice.
I'm sure you might have seen some people. This first video has almost 10 million views, so it's not like it's niche.
Okay. Well, pop the link in. I'll check it out. I don't have anything to recommend, I don't think.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I didn't give you.
Just quickly scrolled through my YouTube history. And it's all just like K-pop, beatboxing, table tennis, or robots. That is all.
That's funny.
The end.
The end.
Cool. The end.
Oh, bye bye. Have fun.
Good to see you.
Stop working.
Thanks. I won't, but thank you. Appreciate the sentiment. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.